Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to your favorite real estate podcast. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. I have the pleasure of being your host. I'm Tejas Gosai. We have an awesome show for you today. My guest today is Sergio Altomar, dear friend. Sergio's expertise spans business and technology architecture, financial management, and general contracting. Sergio's first foray into real estate was in 2004 when he learned some valuable lessons in the purchase of a duplex in my favorite city in the world, Philadelphia. Sergio transitioned into real estate in 2012 as a side business, partnering with his wife to start their holdings company. And in 9 years, they have built a portfolio of over $40 million in assets under management and syndicated over $12 million in real estate deals. He is the king of self-storage. What he is able to do is rare to find. He knows where to buy the asset class, how to buy it, what the value add is, and how to take advantage of a recession-resistant asset. That's what this is. Sergio is going to talk all about it. Great interview. Before we get into it, we are redesigning our website. Check out rei.mba. My goal for the past 20 years has been to help real estate investors create generational wealth for their loved ones. And I have been very successful. I love what I do. I have a great team that I work with. We help folks actively invest. And I also manage a private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund in the market that we invest in. We've helped hundreds of investors build their portfolios over time. Quick example is there's a gentleman who was in his 20s, that early 20s that we met, owned a couple units, and he now has over 46 units in a four-year period. So some successes there. We focus a lot on off-market. Off-market real estate is where our industry is heading. I am a commercial real estate agent solely, so I am not in the MLS, and I don't buy or sell residential real estate. What I'm the best at doing is using our systems to mine the territory we're in, find sellers, take them directly to the buyers that we work with, and make a connection. You can listen to this video, but I think if you've seen stuff online, you know that there might be a better deal if you can negotiate directly with the seller. So we now are sharing on-market and off-market inventory on our website. Over here on the left is a beautiful 10,000 square foot Class A, could be office or warehouse space. Currently, it is a school, a beauty school. Very, very large open space, can be divided into three units. This property is online at $1.26 million. You can check it out anytime. That's one good example. We have a few more coming. Here is, on the right side, an 8-unit available in Easton, burgeoning city, having a new renaissance. On the left, it's a 5-unit building, the brick building. On the right side, it's 3-unit townhouse. Beautiful little property. 7.7 cap, advertised at 1.5 and change. And we're going to be having a lot more of this on our website. We also have a newsletter we'll be sharing this information on. So sign up, check us out, and listen to this amazing interview and some of our other ones. Let's get it to Sergio. Have a great day, guys. Cheers. All right, guys. Very excited. Sergio is here. And Sergio, I just gave a little bit of a long-winded introduction for you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So we got a bunch to get into, and we got to hit some highlights on self-storage soon. But can you just brag about yourself? Tell me some of the stuff that the listeners want to hear about, big things that you've done, and then let's talk about how you got there.
Yeah, sure. So my background is actually in technology. I worked in IT for the Federal Reserve for 22 years. I started investing in real estate with my wife, just buying small multifamily properties to put our W-2 money to work. Eventually started syndicating properties when we realized we had access to more properties than we had capital to deploy. We were, you know, working the day job, working the grind, the night job. My wife actually had another job as well, just really hustling. About 2016, my wife quit the day job to run our business full time. We started along the way, we had started property management as well in the residential side. So we built a portfolio of about 50 properties, you know, either owned, syndicated, or under management. 2017, I quit the day job. It was a big shift going from an executive level at the Fed to full-time entrepreneur. You know, I could still say that I'm still transitioning into that role now. And then 2018 was really a monumental year for us. We rebranded our company in terms of presentation, did our new logo and everything, and then pivoted. We were looking at bigger apartment communities, right? Big complexes. I did all my own underwriting, couldn't find anything to work. I still don't understand how a lot of multifamily investors can make some of these deals work. That's another story. So
can I interrupt you? Can you share some of the sizes and amounts, you know, what you're looking at that?
Yeah. Time? So when we started, our first deal was just under 400,000, the triplex. That was probably true for the next few deals. And then our exits in the multifamily, the peak was probably about just under 1 million. Mm-hmm. And then when we decided that we were going to pivot to self-storage, that was in 2018, we made a concerted effort to sell off all of the multifamily properties. And we started, and we basically had a change in strategy for our investors. We said that we'd like to pivot. We believe that there's a recession coming. Again, this was 2018. I was just looking at the cyclicality of the economy and the markets. And then we decided to pivot to self-storage. I looked at the asset class. I read all the books, you know, and then since then, my wife has been an author of a book in self-storage. And here we are 3 years later. We're about to take our first self-storage property full cycle. We've got about 50 million in assets under management and 5 properties under contract as we speak, 1 to sell, 4 to buy. So it's full steam ahead right now.
That's amazing. So it's funny because that start seemed really slow. And then we're talking about 2018-19, and it's really only 22. So this is a very short period of time. Love the husband and wife duo. My wife and I are, you know, always in this stuff together. How did you scale up that quickly? Those are big numbers. And I'm assuming networking had something to do with it. But, you know, explain to somebody, like, there's a new listener who's like, I don't know anything about real estate. I love self-storage. Yeah. It's really tough to even break into that business. Share some of that.
We started growing exponentially over the last couple of years. And quite honestly, a big part of that was joining a group like GoBundance. If you're not familiar, GoBundance is just a fantastic mastermind community where it's a lot of higher net worth individuals. And plugging into that community and just seeing the growth and scale that, you know, can be achieved, you know, it was really time to really take things to the next level. You know, I read Who Not How, recognized that we can only scale so much, the two of us. We started bringing in partners, started growing things like a real company. Not that we weren't before, but there's a big difference when you're trying to scale and putting in the right resources, right people, right seats, if you have a red traction. So that was really what was the monumental growth there. I was on Bigger Pockets. I think podcast was 540. Or something like that. And that really got us a lot of exposure there. And, you know, the growth when it comes to our investors and raising money was really mostly a matter of time in the game. You know, we started in 2012. We learned the ropes, literally ran our first self-storage facility ourselves. And then, you know, now we've got just a really fantastic team. And I'm all about building elite level people to join our team and really execute at the highest level. And so with each level of growth comes new challenges for sure, but really it's just taking it down one step at a time. And the first 8 years was a grind. Granted, we were both working full time for a while, but really just being methodical in how we learned how to run business ourselves. And, you know, really now just with every, you know, rung of the ladder that we climb, there's new challenges, new business ideas, new concepts that you need to put in place. That's been the struggle and opportunity as well.
Yeah. Love this. Another level, another devil. But, you know, you really scaled those mountains. It sounds like, too, a lot of the networking and just you had people to call. You figured it out. You hired people. Now you're managing a lot of money. I'm a part of a private equity fund that I helped build. It's here in the Lehigh Valley, and it's a newer industry for me. I've represented folks on real estate transactions. How are you sleeping at night and in this economy, right? How are you guys still crushing it? And what can you tell a listener about that?
For me, it's about being disciplined and being disciplined in terms of having a strategy, having a game plan, and responding to what the economy and the markets are doing as opposed to what you think they're going to do. We're not over leveraged, so we've been really responsible when it comes to debt. I review underwriting. Our underwriting is very conservative. So we've bought properly. And I can say that because of the valuations we've got on most of our assets now. And it really comes down to being extra careful during due diligence, leaving no stone unturned when it comes to evaluating a property, the potential, the market, the competition. So from that standpoint, if you're disciplined in what you do and how you evaluate things, then in, then you can be fine. And I do some personal coaching as well. Too often I find individuals that just put together a simple spreadsheet and that's what they buy on. I mean, our models, our financial models are very in-depth, have sensitivity analysis, what if scenarios built in. And really it's about combining the technical know-how with look and feel of a property. It's too often you see individuals trying to shoehorn a deal. It really doesn't work, but they want it to work because they got to get something done. And that's not a good way. I mean, we go through our conversion rate in terms of what we submit offers on is very, very low. It's about probably about 2%. So we go through an awful lot of deals to find the properties that we're going to go after.
That is the way to do it. Just a lot of discipline. Love it. So you're looking everywhere. Let's get into some of this stuff like self-storage. So your last facility, can you just talk about purchase price, units, why you guys bought it, where it is?
Yeah. So the last property we closed on is in Crete, Illinois. Our strategy to date has been generally east of the Mississippi, northeast, mid-Atlantic region. Our criteria, our buy box has been locations where we can get within 3 to 4 hours, typically, including flight, drive, or whatever. So we can visit now. We did just offload all of our property management to a third-party property manager, which has been huge for us. Our initial 6 properties were in Pennsylvania in the Lancaster market. So we maintain management in-house and just the employees there. So our latest deal is in Crete, Illinois. We closed in May. I believe the acquisition was like somewhere around $4 million, but there's an expansion component that's about another $3 million. So our value-add strategy now is a lot of it comes down to development. When you're looking at price per square feet and what you're buying, and there's different metrics to evaluate, cap rate, less important per se, but price per square feet, it really comes down to what are the levers that you can pull? What is the opportunity on these properties? And if we go into a market that we're not in and we look at the demographic, the right level of median household income, the supply and demand numbers are where we need them to be. The competition has the market rates that suggest that we're going to have a good opportunity to increase and gain the value that we need, we'll go just about anywhere. And so we're disciplined in that regard in terms of our buy box, our buying criteria. We're in secondary, tertiary markets. We're typically not competing with REITs, although larger private equity firms. And in some cases, we've certainly evaluated properties that are in REIT markets. They're tougher properties to go at.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of competition in what you're doing. I have been a commercial real estate agent for a little while now. I've been pretty successful, but self-storage is like, every couple days, somebody's like, hey, looking for class A self-storage at 10% cap rate. I'm like, wrong phone call, man. It's just, it's like a unicorn. How do you really find these assets? You have relationships with brokers. Yeah. How do you manage that? If you have a 2%, you're looking at hundreds of properties.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're looking at that many, there's a lot of time. I don't want to say wasted, right? But it's invested in having a lot of losers. Like what's the difference?
The big part of it, going from residential to commercials, there's a big difference there as well. And we're talking about triplexes, duplexes, that's residential real estate. That's not commercial. Going into commercial, as you know from being a commercial agent or broker, you want closers. You want people that know what they're doing, that are going to be on the buy side. And really, there's a lot of credibility. If I'm competing to buy a property with 2 other guys and they're experienced, they've gotten to the closing table, they have a track record, you're naturally going to steer your client, all things being equal when it comes to like offers and whatnot, you're going to steer your client towards what is a more known commodity. For us, it was proving ourselves in the industry. We lost out on the first few deals that we made a good run at in terms of buying and self-storage, had to really establish a good relationship with the brokers. And in some cases, we're trying to sell them on giving us a good shot at acquiring these properties. Now, granted, when we got into self-storage, it was 2018, different market than it is right now. But now, even when we're talking about buying, and even in a lot of cases, the buyer wants to know who you are, what you've done. We've got a track record. We've acquired over a dozen properties and we've closed on all of them. So the capital's there, the financing is there. That goes a long way. So we've got a lot of relationship with some of the bigger brokers in our markets now. If they got a good listing, they know it meets our buying criteria. They'll give us a call. Sometimes we'll get some pocket listings, but we're actually getting more and more general real estate guys that have access to, maybe they're in a market that that they know their market really well, and they get access to a storage facility that is too big for them to take down. And what we offer, we're doing more and more JV models. We're offering the ability for somebody to bring us a deal. And oh, by the way, you get to learn along the way from somebody who's done it. So
you're a little bit of sweat equity to get
absolutely
something amazing.
And that goes a long way. So now we've kind of tipped the scales a little bit. We do have an off-market process and system that we have in place to go direct to owners. But as we move more into development, that's a different animal because now we're targeting some land as well.
Yeah, I love you mentioning off-market and talking about agencies and acquiring the inventory. It's almost like the way to go if you have the right access going straight buyer to seller. We do a lot of the same exact stuff. It's so, so mind-bogglingly difficult to go around the market. So great, you're hitting that. Let's get into the market economics, you know, what's going on nationally. Why is self-storage the way to go? You're not going to stop. Everyone knows that they're great assets. Let's talk about, you know, why they're secure. And if you could share, you're clearly a data guy. I love that. So if you could just tell us what you think is going to happen, some crystal ball stuff, that'd be great.
When it comes to self-storage, and the reason why we made the pivot to self-storage is, number one, it's two things. Yes, there's a real estate component, but it's a business. It's actually a bigger business than it is real estate. And when you evaluate a business, you evaluate the conditions of how the business is going to perform in good markets and bad markets. When it comes to real estate, comes to self-storage, we have a saying in the industry that self-storage is good in good times. It's great in bad times. There's the four D's that determine why self-storage is desirable or a needed service in downtimes. And that's death, downsizing, divorce, and dislocation, right? Those are the four D's that those things happen as part of life. During down markets, they happen at an accelerated pace. So you have storage, which is an added service. Going back to COVID, whereas in multifamily, you had eviction moratoriums and we dealt with it a lot with the portfolio properties we managed. There were a lot of challenges with tenants and a lot of behaviors that have changed. Self-storage was an essential service because of the nature of, we have commercial businesses that store in some cases at our facilities. So when you evaluate it from a business perspective, it's a very good asset. And quite honestly, you look at what lenders want to lend on, they want to lend on self-storage because of that. COVID created a different dynamic to where people needed to create a home office. They needed to create a home classroom. So what do? They convert a room, right? And they empty out the room. They put all their stuff in self-storage. Everybody moves into self-storage and say, yeah, I only need this for a month or two. Tenants are very sticky. Once you put your stuff in self-storage, nobody's clamoring to go rent a U-Haul truck to go move this stuff out of storage. So it ends up just sitting there. And just like, you know, your random streaming service or app on your phone, it's when you're talking about $100 a month, in many cases, it's not a significant blip on your credit card to where you're going to make it a concerted effort to move out. So we have the sticky tenant factor. Other data points when it comes to, you know, storage is there's ancillary income. We sell tenant insurance. You sell locks. There are fees associated with it. There's technology components to the back end that allow you to add to your service and provide a better quality of service than the mom and pop owner down the road. So those are just scratching the surface on all the reasons why we love it.
Yeah, I can tell all of those rabbit holes that you have to go down there. That's really great. So it's a recession-proof.
Resistant. We like to say recession resistant is, okay. Is what we say.
There you go. You know, some people are saying we're not in a recession. I really think things are getting wild and everybody's calling for some blood on the streets, interest rates, all this stuff. It's great to have this podcast to hear people's, kind of crystal ball. So tell me what you're thinking.
You know, it's an interesting coming from the Fed and being literally in the front row, hearing economists regularly. We're in a very interesting market because, yes, we are in a technical recession. We've had negative GDP growth quarter over quarter for 3 quarters now. We're in that recession now, but we also, from COVID and all of the, whether it's the helicopter money, whether it's all of the PPP loans, all of the capital that flowed downstream, there's a lot of money still sitting on the sideline. A lot of people got a lot of money. There are a lot of businesses out there that are being impacted or that were impacted that are still being impacted when it comes to supply chain issues, when it comes to hiring. We have the great resignation on our hands. Then we have a number that came out this morning on non-farm payrolls that just blew the forecast right out of the water that says that a lot of people are hiring. You know, I'm old enough now where trying to predict is a fool's game. Interest rates, yes, they've gone up from a Fed funds rate. However, if you look at the 10-year treasury, you're still getting commercial debt at close to, 5.25%, which doesn't make a significant difference to the viability of a project. It makes a difference to somebody buying a home, but I'm in commercial real estate and my game plans for these properties I'm not a fix and flipper. So the interest rate sensitivity that I have is a little different than the next guy. Maybe the cap rates are going to go up a little bit. I was at a storage conference a few months ago, and the expectation was that about now we were going to see a lot of deals come to a grinding halt. Well, there's still deal flow. I talk to our brokers regularly. There's still a lot of deal flow. The big capital are still out there. There's some people that have panicked, and there are some folks that just made bad decisions when it comes to floating rates and that kind of thing. Home developers are struggling. So I think the impact is being felt differently in different markets and different asset classes, different sizes. So I can't speak for everybody, but in self-storage, we're just being more disciplined, conservative in our underwriting. Our sensitivity analysis really is counting for much higher interest rates. But even though they're raising interest rates at the Fed funds rate, it's not showing yet in terms of treasuries and commercial paper. So those are the types of things. As long as those things are in place, then, we're still going to be a buyer. This is a long game, right? Real estate business, you don't get into it expecting to get rich overnight. If you are, then I don't have a whole lot of advice for you. But if you're in it for the long game, then you'll be fine.
It's a marathon,
yeah,
never a sprint, and you really got it. I hate it that we're coming to time soon. So
yeah,
let's try to just talk a little bit more about self-storage in the other markets that you're in and unit count. Like, what's your biggest one? What's your smallest one? And if you can share some of the locations.
Yeah, so we've got 6 properties in the Lancaster market. Our brand is Hearthfire Self-Storage. We started that brand for, self-storage, another huge part of it is the economies of scale. We have the same management system, same backend platform, one website to find all of our locations.
Bravo.
We're building it out to leverage that. And that's another area where you get margins is by being able to do that. So we've got 6 properties in Pennsylvania in the Lancaster market. We've got 5 properties in the state of Indiana, not far from South Bend, near Lake Michigan, one in Crete, Illinois. We got properties in under contract in Delaware, Virginia, and then another property in Indiana. Smallest property we have is just about 20,000 net rentable square feet, maybe just between 150, 200 units. But that asset being part of our portfolio makes that fit our portfolio well. If it was on its own, then the cost of managing an asset that is not in an area that we're already at exceeds the ability to be able to do that. So what we target is if we go into a market, we want to acquire properties that can meet our desired end goal. And the properties that are ideal for us are 60,000 net rentable square feet or larger. The number of units is less relevant than the net rentable. And from that standpoint, we want the buyer on the back end to be a much larger firm because they're going to have cheaper sources of debt. They will push the buy price a lot higher just based on that.
How about your investors all over the place? Are they, I'm sure they're all over the place, but what's their profile? Are they actively investing as well? Yeah. And you said you do JVs, which I think is the coolest device. Again, time is annoying, but can you share a little bit of that?
Yeah. So we've got investors everywhere from Israel to Hawaii to Los Angeles, Chicago, and everywhere in between. It's a mix. It's generally, we started with friends and family. So we've got a lot of our family invested with us. We've got other real estate professionals. We've got, doctors, lawyers, accountants, generally a lot of higher paying industries. But then we've got a lot of more passive investors that have invested with us as well. And our path to growth right now is looking at targeting. We love the family element of it. Our target investor is more of family office than it is large institutional investors. And there's a different dynamic there in terms of criteria and control. That allows us to do what we do best, which is deal structure, closing, and executing on business plans. I mean, that's our bread and butter.
I love it. Sergio, you are the man. I got to have you back on the show. Thanks awesome. For being here. Great stuff. I have information to get a hold of Sergio everywhere, and wonderful. Thanks for being here, boss.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, anybody wants to reach out, find me on LinkedIn, investwithsergio.com. You'll have it in the show notes, but I love to share. I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for so many people sharing knowledge and information. So I'm always happy to reciprocate that.
Awesome. The right guy to have on our program. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. I'm Tejas Gosai. That's Sergio. Check out the links. We'll talk to you guys soon. Cheers.